You don't lead people by what you say to them. You lead them by what they see you do. True leaders are self-leaders. Israel Moore, Iavor.
Welcome to Coach to Scale, how modern leaders build coaching cultures. I'm your host, Matt Benelli. Join me as we build a community of like-minded professionals who share the belief that effective coaching improves the performance of every team member. Our mission is to help leaders become better coaches. The Coach to Scale podcast is sponsored by Coachem, the world's first AI coaching execution platform that leverages evidence-based coaching to increase quota attainment. And with that, let's get started.
This next guest personifies that leadership by example style. Coming out of the University of Virginia, he was a school teacher teaching fourth and fifth graders. He then moved into selling engineering software. The road less traveled for sure. But for over 21 years, he's been with one group. He's worked his way up and has had a significant impact on what is remarkable growth for his company. Currently, he's president and general manager of Trimex Services. Bill Ripple, welcome to Coach to Scale.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate you having me on.
Listen, so happy to have you on as someone who's been so instrumental in our company's growth over time. You know, we have a mutual friend, Mike Myers, who I think you've known longer than I've known Mike, and I've known Mike since 2002. So we're right around there. I don't know if that's good or bad for us, Bill. I don't know if we want to exactly. Admit that publicly, but together we have 40 plus years of Mike Myers.
And not that Mike Myers.
And not that Mike Myers.
Yeah,
and not that Mike Myers. So, Bill, let's get right into it. You've been doing this at a high level, at a strategic level for a long time. You've run across many, many myths in this business that continue to persist, whether they should or not. You know, we can debate that. But what is one of those myths that you continue to see in sales when it comes to leading salespeople, coaching salespeople that you believe is misguided or even complete BS?
That's a great question. And I think about it a lot because a lot of people say that sales is all about the numbers. And I don't disagree with that. I think there's an extended version of that, though. The numbers need to be connected to a story and a process that are going to motivate people to be better at what they do. And I think on a daily basis, if you think about the end numbers and the results, which are wins and sales, if you're thinking about those, you don't have success. If you think about the process and the different actions you have to take and the way you need to do it, which is nuanced in sales, then you're going to have success. And I take a lot of that. I didn't learn it, but it was reinforced by an article I read about Nick Saban, former coach of Alabama. And it was a really great article. And I use it all the time when I'm talking to salespeople about process. He talked, and I'm paraphrasing here, about that they don't talk about wins and losses on a daily basis. They talk about how to be the best they can be and doing things the right way for them that fits within their structure. And that'll lead to the wins and losses. So they don't forget about the wins and losses, but the process is what gets them there. And that's what they focus on day in, day out, and being the best they can be that way. So I think that's the myth that we try to overcome. And then within our company, and we're always striving for this, it's not like we do a great job at it all the time, but it's connecting those numbers, the end result numbers, to the actions, because you can't dissociate them either. You've got to say, here's the numbers we need to reach, and this is how you're going to get it. And then make sure people understand that connection. And that's something we're always working on. We'd never perfect it, but it's something we want to get better at every single day.
And Bill, that seems to be a core belief that you have that's really shaped you in many ways. Was there an aha moment? Was there a point in time where you recognized that it's not about the wins and losses, it's about what's done day to day? And the answer may be no to that, but I figured I'd throw it out there.
I think there are so many aha moments along the path. I always, when we're talking to new hires, And I do a lot of the initial sales training, whether they're with our group, which is a staffing division where we're finding great engineers for our clients and great people for our clients in the engineering and manufacturing space, or whether they're selling software, 3D CAD software and associated, or 3D printers and scanners, which is our hardware division. No matter what, we talk about the same process. Because in general, if they can sell one thing, they can usually, we can adapt it to fit the other. We don't believe it's the product that sells itself. We believe it's the person in the process that gets that sale across. But one of the jokes I always use, and I get it from going back to Mike, he always says, look for your ideal clients. And I say, and then he says, our ideal clients are slow learners with lots of cash. And then I go, we've been working with them for 20 years. So what does that say about us? So I have all these aha moments. And I think way back when I became a manager, I probably became a manager and I always forget, probably 2005 or 2006, before that I was a sales rep for our company. And then I became our first sales manager, and we were small and we only had like 7 or 8 salespeople. But I probably didn't have the confidence to figure out what I should talk to people about as a manager. So I talked to them about forecasts because that's easy. You know, forecast is black and white. Are they going to come in or are they not going to come in? And again, it's not truly black and white because lots of people think things are coming that aren't, and then don't know things right. are coming that do, right? So it's not really black and white, but it's easier to talk about instead of the process and the confidence, like, oh, this is how you handle this situation. Do I have the confidence to say, this is how I want you to do it? When I walk in the door, do I feel like I can really help someone? And back then, I was unsure, probably just like I was when I started selling. I didn't know if I could sell anything. Like, oh, I don't even know if I can do sales. I was a teacher, right? So I think you have all these aha moments. But one of the big aha moments I think I found was we asked people in sales, the reason sales people make more money is because they're doing things other people won't. They're asking questions other people won't ask and taking more risks than people. It's more a mental risk, but more risks than other people will take on a daily basis. And because it's a mental thing, it goes back to my background in sports psychology and I have a master's in that and a lot of experience with that. And I'm like, aha, I should have figured that out a lot sooner. It took me 20 years to figure that out. And I should be doing sports psychology or performance psychology with our people every single day and helping them overcome those mental fears and how to mentally prepare themselves as well as physically, and then going through the information, learning about the products and services we sell. So that would be the big one, I think, that I am focusing on now. But there's so many aha moments. I go, I can't believe I didn't figure that out sooner. Like, what?
There's
am I
a
thinking?
Book in there somewhere, Bill. There's a book in there somewhere for you. So two thoughts. One is when you talk about why salespeople get paid more, and it just makes me think about this awesome pre-sales, sales consulting, pre-sales leader that I worked with for many years. And when any of the pre-sales folks who really, really knew the products, and you know, sometimes they would just shake their head because, you know, they had a tough job. Like, in addition to presenting the solution and demoing the solution with the clients, they had to really onboard new salespeople.
Right.
And a lot of times the play was when you were first starting is if you're a new sales rep, you introduce the call and you say, well, I'd like to introduce, Bill, the smart person here who knows what the hell we're talking about. And then you expect the sales consultant to run the call as a salesperson. But so you could see why these folks were frustrated. But every time they get frustrated and they would complain about the idiot salesperson, their boss, she would say, hey, listen, if you think what they do is easy, I'm happy to sponsor you to get a role on their team, mm-hmm. Because I can understand why you'd want to make more money and, you're doing it all anyway. Well, do you want that job? And they're, no, I don't want it. Very right. few would say, I want that job. So it was always funny to hear how she did that. But I want to go back to something that you said about, this was me, the way I heard it, which is you focused on the forecast early on, maybe. Almost because you didn't know what else to talk about, or you didn't have the confidence to bring up the more important things. So you reverted to what everyone else was focusing on, which was, hey, is the deal coming in? Is that part of the problem? Because in a lot of exit interviews, you know, a rep will say, oh, I'm just a number here. I'm just a forecast. All my manager talks to me is about my forecast. Is that why you think that happens, or one of the reasons?
I do. I think it comes from above, because forecast is important. We have to get the sales in. We had the same issue with our AEs. We were similar, I think, to your background. We have a lot of application engineers who go out with the salespeople, just as many as we have salespeople, or more than we have salespeople. And they would have the same concerns, like, oh, this, you know, I can't believe they're doing this, and they don't know what they're doing. They don't understand the products, which is true. And I think it's easy to talk about the forecast, because that's kind of what's important. It's the end result. It's like talking about, it's the wins and losses. Mm-hmm. I think that ultimately that is important, but if you only talk about that, then you never talk about, well, like what do I have to do to get there? Cause that's not just going to happen because I talk about whatever product or service we're selling. I mean, in our case, it used to be for a lot of my time, it was SolidWorks, and that's still our biggest product, which is a 3D CAD software, right? Like, do I just go out and say, here's SolidWorks, take a look, you know? Well, that didn't get things sold. And having people want to have quotes didn't get things sold either. It didn't lead to the results. So what is it we have to do? And I heard this from another sales manager a long time ago. He said, you know, the problem is that the person imprinted on you, the new hire imprinted on you and not on me and what I want. And there were slight differences in how we wanted them to go about it. And again, an aha moment for me more recently is like, if we really want our sales people to be who we want them to be and meet our expectations, we have to be really clear about what those are, which can be hard in sales because it's really, there's a lot of gray areas in sales. But then we have to show them, and we're going to say, hey, this is what I want you to do every day. This is what it sounds like on a daily basis. This is what the best people do. And I want you to hear what that sounds like, because when you say it, it doesn't come across nearly as well as when they say it. So if you can learn to just copy them, then your life will be way easier. And you don't have to reinvent the wheel every single time. Just do what they're doing, right? And if we can show them that process, then it will lead to success. And they can make it their own a little bit along the way, but right away, like, just do it the way we're doing it. Why reinvent the wheel? We'll let you blend your skills into that. And I think that would, again, was an aha moment that, again, I wish I'd learned earlier, probably haven't seen until the last 5 years that I realized, going like, we need to do that. And we have a sales manager working for us now on our recruiters that really started doing that. And that's when I saw it, because she said, we're not going through the regular company onboarding the first month. We're going to do it our way, and I'm going to sit with them for a week, and they're just going to listen to me. And then the second week, they're going to listen to all the other recruiters. And this is on the recruiting side of the business. And then on the third week, they're on their own, but they know exactly what the best people in our company do by that point. So they know what they should be doing. And I was like, I should have thought of that years ago, you know?
I had this conversation with a friend in the business last night, and then late last week, I recorded a podcast, and I asked the individual, very senior person, very successful serial entrepreneur, what's a lesson learned? And he said exactly what you said, which was, I wish I recognized earlier that people can't read my mind, and that they're very rarely going to do what I want them to do. Unless I was more clear. So he said, I wasn't more clear. If I could go back in time, I would tell people crystal clear exactly what I'm expecting, and then model for them what it could sound like, and then have them do it.
Right.
And to make sure that we're aligned. He said, because I would always get frustrated at, like, why aren't people doing it kind of the way I want them to do it, or I told them to do it. He said, but I never showed them.
Right.
So, which kind of, I think, ties back to the whole leadership by example thing that we talked about in our prep call. Mm-hmm. So training and coaching, when we're onboarding folks, whether it's a new manager or a new rep, there's a lot of training and coaching that goes into investing to make that rep mm-hmm. or that person successful. What's the difference, Bill, between training and coaching? And where do they intersect?
I think they intersect really early. Again, that's a great question. And I, even preparing for this, I was like, okay, what's the difference? I think training is getting yourself ready on a daily basis. Every single day, what are you doing to prepare yourself for the moment? And in this case, talking to a client, being live with a client, what are you doing to prepare yourself for that on a daily basis? And then coaching is making the tweaks to it along the way. And in athletics, and I go back to my experience as a competitive swimmer and you know, through high school and college and even before that. But every day you're training over and over and over, and swimming is grueling. I mean, every sport has its hard parts, but it's grueling because you're just looking down and going back and forth over and over and over, and you can't even talk.
The meek may inherit the earth, but they'll never rule the water.
Right.
Quote I saw. Yeah.
Wow. I like that quote. So you're going back and forth, and that's training, but it's the little tweaks that a coach can give you. And a lot of that comes from what happens in the moment of competition, because that's when you're under pressure and your training needs to lead to the results. And if your training's just a little bit off, your results won't quite be what you want them to be. So if you can get the coaching either during your training or after the event, the results come through and you can tweak something, and hopefully it's just a micro adjustment, not some huge thing, then you can make those adjustments and go back to training a little bit differently the next time. So they work in association with one another. But sometimes you need that, I guess it's an aha moment or the punch in the nose moment of the competition or the meeting with a client to get your point across, even as a coach. And the coaching is helping people to see that this training is going to lead them to that success too. It's the motivation side of things, like, hey, this is what our best people do. This is why I'm training you to do it. Not because I want you to be a robot like everyone else. It's because this is what's led to success the most often, and helping them see the light. And I know we're going to talk about this potentially in a little while, but I think one of the things that a lot of coaches do is they can see in people potential that the people can't see themselves, right? And they want to help bring it out. Like, I know, I go back to my kids, like, I know how much you're capable of, and you can't even see it yet. And you don't have the confidence to believe that it's there, which is a little bit of hope, right? There's a hope.
Right.
And a faith to that part. And I'm not talking about a religious faith, but a faith that's there. Like, I can see this potential in you. And helping them understand, if we do this right process, that potential is going to come out. So that's the part of the coaching that's really important too. So it's not only making the adjustments, but understanding why they're making these adjustments and where it's going to lead to, and helping people see the vision. And I think that goes back to sales too. In sales, we got to help a client or prospect see the vision of where they can be. And sometimes they're trapped in their own little world and they don't have that sight. But we've seen other people do it, and they're like, oh, I'm like, you just haven't seen it yet. Let me talk to you about what other people are doing just like you.
You brought up vision. You made me think of something when you were talking about swimming. And I recall a story about, I think it was Michael Phelps, and he would visualize himself in the pool, mm-hmm. You know, doing whatever, you know, the 4x4, you know, whatever his event was, whatever the event he was preparing for, he would visualize himself doing it. And there was some discussion in what I read that the visualization itself is so powerful that it's almost as good as actually going out there and doing it.
Right.
And so when I think about visualization, I put it in the category of preparation. And a question comes back to confidence. Is there a role for visualization in sales to provide or instill greater confidence in what we're doing, you know, when we're in the pressure situation?
Right. That's something actually that we've been talking about a lot in our little group of at Trimec, the group of 20 that we work with on the staffing side. A lot of sales is asking, like we talked about, tough questions and having tough conversations to get to really help people understand what they're going through, what the potential could be, and then what the process is going to look like for them to make a change and whether or not they really want to do that. Those are all tough conversations to have. And one of the things we've talked about more recently, even in our little group, is like doing some visualization. So you're about to have, you know, you have to have this conversation, but you don't want to do it, right? You're hesitant about it because you're not confident. You don't know how it's going to turn out. So I always say, like, take a quick breath because that helps people clear their mind. Visualize yourself really quickly having success, what success looks like. Okay, if I have this conversation, this is going to be the end. And then count 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and start talking. Like, but you have to practice that. So there's that little bit of visualization. And I think visualization also comes back, and we've been talking about this in our group, is after things have gone poorly, or maybe not the way you wanted, what would I do differently? And then picture yourself doing it differently the next time and coming up with different questions or asking different questions like, oh, I wish I'd had this approach to it. I'd ask this, or I'd talk to him this way, or I'd use these words. And then visualize yourself doing it. That's a form of practice. And you hear of examples like you're talking about of people visualizing and coming out and doing just as well as if they had physical practice. And I think there are great stories that I can't retell exactly right now of prisoners of war.
The golf story?
Right, the golf story where they played the same course every single day in their head while they were a prisoner of war. And then they came out and they did really well. Now, it's not going to be perfect, but it's, you know, better than anybody would expect. And you can do that on a daily basis. And we talk about that in our group. We're not all great at it, including me, and reinforcing it. But it's like, okay, how would I handle that differently? Let me see what it looks like. Let me think about it, hear it in my head. And you can use all the senses to do that. And then, okay, you know, replay it again and again and again. And then prep yourself right before it. And then take a breath and then do it in the moment. And that's the hard part, is getting yourself to do it in the moment sometimes.
Hmm. We were watching March Madness basketball over the weekend, and one of the basketball players had this, you know, free throws with like basically no time left on the clock to tie it and then hopefully to win it. And my wife said, "Oh, I don't know how they do it under such pressure."
Right.
And we talked about like they. A lot of times they don't even know it's there. It's so muscle memory. They've practiced it. They shoot hundreds of free throws a day. They visualize, they do visualization exercises. There's not a lot of thinking that goes into it. Right. And I think that ties into what we're talking about here. But the type of people, like when you say, hey, we're talking about this in our group, that group has to be made up of the type of people that are going to respond to that type of leadership, coaching, preparation, et cetera. My guess is over 20 plus years with TriMac, there's a lot of people who fall right in line and cling to it. And this people who just don't think it's like voodoo. What the hell are you talking about? Just let me go out there and sell something. How do you approach this in the hiring process to make sure you have the right people on your team? What are you looking for?
We're always trying to hone that too. It's not something we think we've got a great answer to, because hiring is so hard, and looking for those characteristics, especially with salespeople who can convince you of a lot of things that maybe aren't true. Oops. All you know, which is not the type of salesperson we want. We want somebody who's going to be convincing you of things that are true. And it also makes me laugh because we talk about in our within our company, we've been, you know, kind of using the approach from Mike Myers and learning from Mike Myers for a long time. And one of our inside salespeople a long time ago, she said, she's like, I don't buy into your cult. And she didn't love sales. She was in inside sales because that was the role that was available. We were really small. So that was, she kind of had to do that as part of her role. I don't buy into your cult stuff. But I think,
well, it is a little, I mean, look, we've been in right. Sandler for many, many years. You go down to the summit with a lot of people like us, right? It's a cult.
It's a cult, but it's a mindset and a way of being that is, in my mind, if we go back to being the number one goal is to have a great conversation to help them, clients or prospects, figure out if it makes sense to buy what we have, and it might not, right? That's our goal. And it's the process and the techniques are about having that great conversation, helping us to have that conversation and help them, right? That's our goal. And if we have that mindset and our culture, whatever we're going to call it, spirit, cult, whatever we want to call it, then everything will be cascade down from those things. So I want to look for people, going back to your original question about what we look for. Again, we're always honing it because we don't always do a great job of hiring. But for me, I always look for a history of success. What have they done in the past, no matter their background? And a long time ago, we went the route at Trimec of looking for people who were just successful at whatever they did. It could be salespeople. A lot of times they were salespeople who were successful, but it might be from some other occupation. Were they successful? How did they get to that success? Could they verbalize it? Like, this is what I did to get to be successful in whatever I did. And then I think more recently, and I heard Don Staley, who coaches basketball at University of South Carolina, they're number one in the country for women's basketball right now, who in fact was in college with me at the same time. And I used to say hello to her all the time. She said, I heard her interviewed and she said, how do you know if you got the right person for your team? And she goes, I talked to the parents. And I was like, and then she went and they said, what do you, I think it was with Dan Patrick. And he said, well, what do you ask them? And she said, I ask them, I look for if they've challenged their child growing up. Like, what kind of challenges, or was it always easy? Because a lot of people are so skilled that it was always easy for them, right? Right. And that reinforced to me, we're looking for people who've had to go through some challenges, not necessarily huge ones, but it wasn't always easy for them. And I had a really good interview once, and this guy said, well, I was walking door to door selling copiers. And I knocked on this door and they said, yeah, I need two copiers. And I sold them a couple of copiers and their name happened to be Under Armour and they exploded. And I had a great year, because they were Under Armour and they became this giant company and I sold them all their printers. So I was kind of lucky that way, but it also showed me some humility. And I think people need to understand, like I look for some of that. Like, I'm always trying to get better. There's a little bit of humility to that. So, kind of going back to your original question, I look for history, success, hard worker, some humility, but also understanding like there's some challenges and how have I overcome challenges and what process do I go through? What do I do when I get challenged or punched in the nose, and ask them questions about those things.
And is there a go-to question or a question that you like that you've used over the years that's similar to what Coach Staley talked about in terms of like looking for questions? Is that challenge? Is there a specific question?
I think the on the challenging side, I say, talk to me, and it could be, and I always say it could be about anything. Talk to me about the biggest challenge you've been through in your life and how you've gone through it. Could be work related. If you don't want to be too personal, it could be personal, whatever you want to do. And then walk me through that a little bit. And I think it's good for our company. I haven't had to do a lot of interviews recently because we haven't had a lot of turnover, which is good. We're also having the economy's a little bit tough. So we haven't added people either, but I haven't had to do interviews recently, but that's one I do like to ask people and see how they respond. And then talk to them about that and get people to elaborate on that story. Cause I think the elaboration's where you can tell how much people have really thought about it and gone through it and processed it.
Does your approach, does it change much? Do the questions change when you're hiring leaders, managers versus individual contributors?
I tried to think about that question a little bit because I knew we were going to talk about it. And I don't know that I have a really good answer for it. But I do think that leaders really, again, need to hone in on process. And going back to Dreema Davis, our recruiting manager, she's really good at process. And I probably didn't look for that as much before. And I haven't had to hire a lot of managers recently. So I haven't had to do it. And a lot of times they've come from within. But if I look for people that I want to do to be leaders from within our company, and we try to promote from within a lot, I look for people who don't have to be in the spotlight. Like, it's not about them. Cause I think the big problem we have is we need to, you know, if you look at just great sales reps, they want to be the star all the time. And if they're the star all the time, we can't grow. We can't scale because we need other people to be successful. You know, they need to help make their people successful, not be the superstar themselves. And that can be hard to get through. So you got to look at what's best for my people? All my stories can't be about me, right? All the highlights of how we as Trimec do things can't be about the great things I did. They need to be about the different things different people in our company did that are successful.
I had a guest not too long ago, Kevin Martin, and Kevin described the difference between the best salespeople and the best sales leaders. And he said, the best salespeople, he said, I don't mean this to sound disparaging in any way, but the best salespeople are often selfish. But that doesn't correlate. That doesn't jive with being a great sales leader. The best sales leaders have to be selfless.
Right.
And I think what you talk about wanting the spotlight is a great, example of the difference between selfish and selfless.
Right.
Thanks for bringing that up. So Bill, you talked about this a little, you talked about a lesson learned, but we can use the same one or we can dig into it more deeply or talk about another one. But what is a lesson learned that over time that you wish you really, really, really knew earlier and were able to benefit from that over the last, 10, 15 years instead of learning it more recently?
There's so many. They all seem recently because they're like punches in the nose, so you never forget them. I can remember one, and this wasn't recent. This was way back when I became a manager. And again, it goes back to our approach in Sandler and the pain and pain funnel. And I wasn't good at it as a sales rep. I didn't take people. I'd get anxious and I'd leave the pain funnel way too early. So I wouldn't have really real good pain.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Exactly. Well, I can tell you what I can tell you is that, I would lose my confidence and I'd think, okay, I gotta go. I gotta move on because they're ready to go. And the truth was, when I look back, in staffing, it's a little bit different than software. Like once somebody decides they're going to hire, they almost always hire. They don't always hire with us. They might find somebody internally. They might find somebody from another recruiting agency like we are. But almost always they hire, right? On the software side, we lost more to status quo than anything else. And when I thought about that, I was like, okay, why did we lose the status quo? And the reason we lost status quo, because there wasn't a real issue, at least not one that was big enough for them to make a change. And I go, okay, well, if there's not a real issue, that means we got to do a lot better at getting the pain, right? And we got to do that in staffing too, because the pain of hiring somebody that we want to find and paying for the service needs to be big enough, right? Because we don't want to just be like a second option, like in case we never find somebody, we'll use Trimec, right? Because then we do a bunch of work on things that we never get paid for. But on the software side, on the technology side, software, hardware, I wish I'd known that sooner, like, let's really focus on pain, really focus on client issues rather than solutions. Talking about those first, they'll lead to solutions because we're going to resonate with them if we talk about what they're going through.
Right.
And people aren't comfortable with that. It's way easier to talk about the solutions because you learn all about it. And so it's more fun, right? Who wants to talk about bad stuff when you can talk about all the great things we can do for them? But if they don't really realize that they've got a problem, that it's a big problem that other people are solving every single day or have solved every single day and are easily working through. It doesn't matter how great our solutions are. So getting that pain is so important. And that was a big lesson learned early. And I feel like we're still working on that even as an entire company. Like we don't focus enough on customer issues and what they're going through and then getting into that and understanding that and then understanding what the process looks like for making a change. So it's really the qualification stage as a whole, like who's making the decision, how are they making it, do they have the money for it, all those things together, lesson learned, qualify harder, even though we talk about it all the time.
Well, it's interesting because I hear this a lot, but it's also a little bit funny because there's been so much change in sales, like technology and innovation and money spent. But at the end of the day, a senior successful person like yourself is echoing a lot of what I hear from other senior successful people, which is we got to focus on something as elemental, as core, foundational, as do they have a problem? Is it big enough that they're going to pay money to solve it?
Right.
And
can that person do it? Right. And what I figured out a lot more recently, because then we started focusing on pain and getting people really good at that is okay. And again, it's like I'd never done this before, which is what's the most frustrating is like, you know, if we really talk to them about their process and we know they're the right person to talk to, they're the one who can make this decision, then the map is there. All we have to do is have a conversation every single time about, hey, this is where we are. This is what's going on. Has anything changed? The next step is this and then this. And as you know, are we still on track for that? And if we're not, it's okay. I just want to, you know, get your confirmation on it. Make it easy for them to just keep us on the path instead of living in that world of like hope and not knowing. And I wish I just adhered to that sooner.
If not, it's okay. But right. 100%. So let's pivot a little bit, Bill. You've been at TriMec for over 21 years. So a long time, especially in this day and age. It's remarkable. It's impressive. For the audience, couple things. What does TriMec do? And then the second question is, what's kept you there for so long?
Both questions I think about all the time. what TriMec does is we're an engineering technologies and services company. So we go to people who are designing and manufacturing, not so much engineering like bridges or buildings, but more like product design. You know, could be anything from airplanes all the way down to, you know, a mouse, right? So we're going to those clients, and if we want to stick with what their issues are, and we're talking to them about their processes for getting those products even thought up in the first place to all the way getting delivered to their clients. That's the process that we work in. And we're looking for inefficiencies in those processes they're having and how we can fill them, either with technology, being software or hardware, 3D printers and scanners, or people. Because companies are typically trying to grow either through adding people or automating or both, right? Yep. So we're trying to help them with those efficiencies with the people we provide on the staffing side, right? Or our project engineering group, which is another part of my group. So it's a group of engineers that we have on staff that will, if somebody said, I want to redesign this mouse, can you do it for me? We'll say, yeah, it's going to cost this much. We'll have it do it for you in a couple of weeks. And then we give them the design work for that. We have people internally that'll take that on. So it's a little bit like staffing, except it's our own, right? So it's finding those gaps in their processes and then filling them either with our technology or with our people. But you have to find the gaps first. And that's what I would say TriMec does in general. So we're trying to be the go-to resource for all our engineering and manufacturing clients. That's what we're trying to do. And a lot of it's about that process. Second part of your question is why I've been here. I think about that all the time. And I go, well, the easy answer is maybe I don't like change, right? I've stuck around for a long time.
But it's changed a lot. I mean, right. You know, I know, for example, I was at Oracle for 62 and a half quarters. When you work there, you measure your life in quarters.
Yeah.
But I felt like I had a different job sometimes every 6 months.
Right.
So it wasn't like I worked at the same company for that long, but
right.
Perhaps you feel similarly.
I do. We've changed so much since I began. When I started, we probably had maybe 15 people. That was in 2001. And it was I started the end of August in 2001. So 2 weeks before 9/11, but I'd been a teacher and not really in sales. So I really didn't even understand the impact of what 9/11 did to the economy. Like I didn't know things weren't going well afterwards on sales because, you know, I was 2 weeks in. But I think when I really talk to people about, because they do ask me all the time, and I used to interview every salesperson that would come through, even when we were bigger up and down the East Coast, they'd fly into Richmond and they'd talk with me and a bunch of different people. And they'd say, why are you here so long? At least the good ones would say, why have you been here so long? And I'd say, well, it's the people I work with or what make a difference to me and the atmosphere in which I work. That's what makes the big difference for me because I work with great people every single day and working with our sales manager, John Madden, on the staffing side, and Dreema every single day, and Adam Baker on the project engineering side. I work with those people every single day, and I know what they're trying to do. And we have this belief that we're trying to do the right thing the right way for our clients. And it makes it more fun because you see when you're going out there talking to clients, all the ways you're glad you're not being, right? You can see that when you're out there talking to clients and prospects, and you're like, gosh, I'm glad our company's not like that. I'm glad I like the people I work with right. And in the atmosphere. And our owner for the longest time, our owners for a little while, and then owner for a long time. Steve Pelham was a great person to work with because he provided this atmosphere where we had a lot of freedom and a lot of responsibility at the same time. But he wasn't going to micromanage. He was going to let you do your thing your way and help you figure those things out if you needed his help on them. But he used to say, like, if you need a manager, this is the wrong company for you. Now, that's why he made me the first manager we had. But I would say it's the people we have beyond anything else, and the atmosphere that those people have provided that have kept me here the longest.
Hmm. So important. Great reminder. So as we pivot, as we move to close it out here, Bill, a couple of questions about coaching. The first one is, you know, this is the Coach to Scale podcast. So we talk a lot about coaching, and we bring people on who have a point of view, who care about the coaching and the development of themselves and of others. Usually people like yourself who care about that stuff had it modeled for them in some way. Who was somebody in your life that coached you that had an impact on you and your career?
We'll stick to coaches because obviously my parents were a huge influence on how I did things. But I think of really three coaches for me through the years. And they were, I did other sports too, but swimming was my primary sport for the longest time, especially after I was in high school. That was it. That's all I did. But I had a summer league swim coach who's still one of my family's best friends. We consider him family. He was in the family section of my wedding. his name is Dennis Miller, not that Dennis Miller, Dennis Miller. He's in Manassas, coached summer league. He coached different high school sports at different points. He was a teacher for a long time. He was a teacher in my elementary school too. In the same grade with my mom for a long time. And, he was a great coach in that he said, this is how we're going to do things. He'd figure out the simplest way we're going to get to success. And we're going to do this every single day. And he knew nothing when he started about swimming, but he figured out a couple of things. Like if you do your starts and turns really well in summer league, because the races are so short, you're going to give yourself such an advantage. And we did that half of practice every single day. And we were so good at it. And he'd have all the coaches and everybody had that same focus. So a lot of what I attribute to him is process. And no matter what he did, he focused on process. And he was a great coach in summer league. I mean, I think our summer league team won for like 20 straight years at one point. he didn't like soccer, but he had to coach soccer when he took his teaching job. They became champions early on in his career. He coached JV basketball at one point. When he stopped coaching, they'd won 77 straight games. So he always figured it out. And it was all about process. We're going to do these things the right way every single day. So I think that was imprinted upon me a long time ago. And I worked for him too at the summer pool as well as swimming for him. So that was one. Then my coach in club swimming growing up, I think what his name was Don Regenbogen. What I would say about him that I really got from him is he helped me see what I could be, right? And what hard work meant. And he brought the energy to that every single day. I couldn't do it. Like I can remember I used to say he yelled at us every day, but he was yelling for us. It wasn't negative in any way. It was just like this energy that he would bring every day. And he would talk to me about how good I could be. And I didn't believe it at the time, you know, when I started working with him. So he helped bring out that individual confidence in what I did and helped me see the vision of what I could be. And then my third coach would be my college coach, Mark Bernardino, who he was the head coach at University of Virginia for 30 years, won more ACC championships than any coach in any sport ever. Now he's an assistant coach at NC State, and they're a great program and top five in the country. But But I would say what he did and what he brings is the team aspect, really finding what that motivation and I hate to use the word mission because it's overused, so it means nothing almost. But what's the mission? Like, what's our goal? What's our mission? What do we want to be? And how do we want, what do we want our characteristics to be? What do we want our, again, culture and overused word to be? And how are we going to work towards that? Right. And everything cascades down from, again, from that. So I get that part from him because we were I used to say at Virginia, we weren't like a top 20. We were top 20 team, but we weren't like a top 10 team. Our facilities weren't that great when I was there. We didn't have full scholarship allotment, so we couldn't fully fund a team as on, you know, scholarship. But we were going to outwork everybody, and that was our that was our motto. They're going to come to this dungeon that we swim in. They're going to see what we're going through. They're going to hate it, but we're going to live through it every single day. So we know we can do anything, and we believed in that mission, in that culture, and I you know, I take that from him, and I try to implement all three of those things, or three the lessons I learned from all three of those coaches. Actually here at Trimec.
Great reminder that you don't just have to have one coach or one mentor or, you know, one person from whom you learn. You can take pieces from a lot of different folks and make it your own process. So Bill, in talking about coaching, who's your favorite coach? And let me just a little context. Someone that most people would know the name of. Who's a famous, your favorite coach out there? And what are the attributes about that person that make you admire them?
I tried to think about that in preparation because I knew we were going to talk about that. And I don't know that I have a favorite coach that everybody's heard of. I've talked about Nick Saban a lot here. The article I read on him was great, and the processes, and it seems like his players all think highly of him. I talked about Don Staley. There's a coach at UVA, University of Virginia, Tony Bennett, who won a national championship a couple years ago. And if you read about his processes and his pillars for success, those are stupendous. I was listening to an interview with Gino Auriemma, who was at UConn women's basketball, won so many national championships. But an example, I think that I talk to a lot of people about, because you always go, who would you want to coach your kids? And I talked about my old coach, Mark Bernardino, and I always wanted him to coach my kids. And I used to send them to camps just so they'd be around him. But there's a guy named Eddie Reese, who's at the University of Texas. He's actually retiring after the Olympics this summer. And when my son was on a recruiting trip there for swimming, he was walking by my wife, who was there with him, and another mother. And he just sat down in a giant cafeteria, and he walked by and he saw him, and he just sat down next with him and talked to him for an hour. And he said, these are the things that, like, I like to do for the boys. You know, like, we're the ones that are critical. The coaches are the ones who are going to give them feedback on how we want them to be better, but we want them to be positive with one another. And here's all the things we do. At the end of a week, we always say, everybody's got to say one positive thing about somebody else on the team. And I just thought, that is awesome. Because those are the types of people you want your kids to be like. And I always go, like, what can I be doing to hopefully lead other people to want to be like me, even though I'm not originating anything. I was like, we're all like other people that we've learned from over our existence. Mm. Kind of going back to the book, The Power of Myth. I don't know if you've heard of that book, but I read it a long time ago. People have already blazed a path for us. We're not having to reinvent most anything, right? Almost none of us are going to purely unique situations. So we just have to learn a little bit from lots of different people about how to navigate those situations. And I thought that was a great example of an original way to navigate situations and really bring your team together. And it was something I thought of. So all those coaches are ones I think of as great ones and ones I look up to the most. But that was a story I relate to a lot of people because I thought it was such a perfect story for the type of person I would like to be.
Hmm. And it dramatically illustrates the point that people don't care what you know until they know that you care. Right. Right. People don't care. You know, it's, yeah, you care that he's a great swim coach, but what you just described and what your wife and the other mothers there cared about was that, no, it's, yeah, we know he's a great swim coach, but we want to know that he's going to care about our sons and daughters, mm-hmm. Before we send them, you know, to school there. And yeah, that's fantastic. Bill, I think that's a solid place to leave it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. You know, we've covered a lot of ground today. Yeah, we covered a lot of ground today. We talked about the importance of the people that you work with and around for, you know, that keep you at a company for so many years. We talked about the power of seeing things in others that they don't yet see for themselves. And talk about the importance of confidence and what the lack of confidence brings out in us versus what true confidence allows us to do for ourselves and for the people that work for us. So all awesome reminders, great points, and thanks for sharing. So to everybody else out there, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And if we appreciate you engaging wherever you get your podcasts and on social media, like it, comment on it, engage, tell us what you don't like. Tell us what you'd like to see more of. We want to bring the best guests to you, talking about things that you actually care about and giving you advice that you can take immediate action on. So with that, thanks again, Bill. And for everyone out there, until next time, coach them if you want to keep them.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Coach to Scale, How Modern Leaders Build Coaching Cultures. For show notes and other episodes, visit us at coachem.io. That's coachem.io. And follow us on Twitter at coachemnow. See you all next week. Thanks for joining. And remember, coach them if you want to keep them.